Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is former Senate staffer turned author Jane Jones. Jane and I will be discussing about her latest novel titled Capitol Hell. It is an inside look at behind-the-scenes political happenings on Capitol Hill and inside the Beltway. Good morning, Jane. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
Fantastic. Thank you. Good morning.
Great to have you calling me from Wisconsin. It's very cold up there.
And it's a chilly morning.
Thank goodness I'm in Dallas. It is warm here, and it's nice. And thinking about the fact that you're in the frigid cold, it must be something else.
Right. It's chilly. But, you know, I'm looking at a frozen lake right now that has a little bit of a We've shoveled off a skating rink, and it's got one net out, so it's pretty.
Well, Capitol Hell is a very interesting read. It's funny, and it's well-written. It's very entertaining. It is obviously for women, young and old, but I believe men will enjoy it as well, because if they are really interested in finding out the happenings in D.C., they got to read this book, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we're finding that men are enjoying the book just as much as women are enjoying the book. So we had an absolute blast reading Capitol Hell, and our best thing right now is actually having readers, when they say they're laughing out loud, emailing us, telling us the story that they really got a chuckle out of the book. So it's been a treat.
Wonderful. Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Sure. I grew up in northern Minnesota in a very small town. Went to Concordia University in St. Paul, majored in political science. Then went on to be a lawyer because there's not enough lawyers in D.C. I decided that I would throw my hat into volunteer on a campaign. It was Norm Coleman versus Paul Wellstone for the U.S. Senate.
Mm-hmm.
Senator Coleman won, and then I ventured off to D.C. with a good senator, where I was Norm's policy advisor on healthcare, education, social issues, and kids.
Wonderful. When did you discover you like to write?
Oh, gosh. You know, I think there's always been like a little bit of creativity in my stomach, so to speak, where I would like to express myself either through, you know, through music or through writing. And so I just think, you know, I started back probably back when I was a teenager.
Interesting. So do you use your writing to express yourself in a public forum or just to basically entertain others?
Well, thankfully, God gave me a talent of writing so I could actually write some political speeches. That it would be used in a public forum. But, you know, Capitol Hill definitely was written to entertain and make folks laugh and have a little fun from the Hill.
When did you realize you liked politics, though?
Oh, my gosh. I think it's in the blood. My grandfather was the chairman of the Republican Party in Minnesota for years. So I think it's genetic that I got a little bit of a political buzz in me. And in college, I volunteered, had an internship at the Minnesota Capitol, fell absolutely in love with the process. And, you know, I've always kind of been interested in issues and trying to make America and Minnesota better to serve others. So I think that's probably more of my insight is I always like to see the problem and then find a solution. That's me folks like to, a lot of folks like to bellyache, right, Johnny? A lot of folks like to complain, but not too many folks like to find the solution. So I think that's the insight. I'm not sure I'm into politics as much as public policy.
Public policy. Do you have a lot of following among your friends, or were you kind of the oddball, I guess?
Oh, gosh, no, but your friends really become your folks that hang out with the same issues that you like about. So on a campaign, if folks are looking to hang out with people that have the same interests and same values, there's no better place to find friends than your campaign, than volunteering on a campaign, because you're all generated to the exact same person in candidacy, so you have something already similar in common. So it's a good place to find friends.
Very interesting. So what is the inspiration behind Capitol Hell?
You know, I wrote Capitol Hell along with Elisa Long. Elisa and I are best friends. We worked together in the U.S. Senate. And we were sitting on my couch 4 years ago, believe it or not, 4 years ago, sitting on my couch. And we used to always tell people our stories and stories that we hear from the Hill. And everybody would always laugh when we tell them. And we both used to get told, you know, you guys are both funny, you're witty, you both have a knack to write, you should write a book. And we always kind of laughed it off. Well, 4 years ago, we decided we were going to take a stab at it. Alicia wrote chapter 1. I wrote chapter 2. We bounced that way the entire book. And you know, we're best friends. We talk every day. We never talked once about the book. We never had any notes, no outline. So I'd, mm-hmm. I'd get a chapter, and I'd realize, oh, my gosh, Karma, the senator's wife in the book, is now off to do, you know, she's off to Iraq to go shopping. So mm-hmm. it was a fun book. It's based a little bit based on our own experiences. It's a lot of embellishment, some stories that we have made up.
Why did you choose to write it, though?
Oh, because, you know, I think that there's so much mudslinging and politics, and mm-hmm. everybody always hears the nitty-gritty, that we thought, you know what, we're going to bring a little fun and hilarity from the Hill outside the Beltway and show folks, give a little glimpse into life, what life is like inside a Senate office. Because there's mm-hmm. no other really book that's kind of similar to it. So we thought, you know what, we're going to give it a shot.
Were there challenges in writing the book?
Oh, of course, there's challenges in everything you do in life, and you just got to overcome those challenges. You know, I was thinking the challenges for us is finding the time. I mean, it definitely took 4 years. It wasn't like we were writing, every single day for the next, you know, for mm-hmm. 4 years. Mm-hmm. We'd write a chapter, and maybe it would sit for a while, and then we'd write it again. And, you know, we figured out about a year ago that if we were really going to jump off the diving board and do this book, that we had to kind of crank it into high gear. So I think finding the time was challenging. We both have full-time positions. Alicia's an attorney at the DEA, and I am a mm-hmm. professor at Concordia. So, you know, I think it's just finding the time. And also, I think collaborating with somebody else to write a book, that's always kind of an interesting scenario, too.
Very interesting. Please give us a synopsis of the book.
Oh, gosh. I kind of think I already answered a little bit of that. You know, the synopsis is basically that Senator McDermott, Anders McDermott III, senator from Minnesota. It's a fictional Senate office. And, you know, it basically goes through what happens to a Senate staffer, Allison, and her best friend, Janet, as they work for the senator, and then he decides he's going to run for president. So at the end of the book, you know, it's the start of a little presidential campaign, and in the book, Janet's online dating the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, who's also written against McDermott for president for the endorsement of the Republican Party. And there's just so many twists and turns. There's so much shenanigans that happens to those two.
Do you feel like the book pretty much reflects in so many ways the happenings that's going on all over the country with different candidates?
Oh, yeah, I would say the different candidates. I would say that we definitely give a little bit of a glimpse into what life is really like inside a D.C. Senate office.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the book isn't true. The book is fictional. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the book is full of all our stories that we've heard from, you know, from other congressional staffers, plus stories that happened to us. So, you know, I think it does give a glimpse into what reality really kind of can be. But now, this is one office, and obviously it's over a one-year period of time, and there's so much shenanigans that happen that no Senate office could really exist if all this would actually happen. It'd be shut down.
It's true, but at the same time, how much of the information in the book is facts and how much of it is fiction, though?
Oh, gosh. You know what? A good girl never kisses and tells. You know what? That's kind of fun for the reader, Johnny, to figure out what's true in the book
yeah.
and what's not true. So, you know, we don't... You know, there's a little bit of fact, there's some embellishment,
yeah.
there's some stories we've made up.
Yeah. Did you have to do a bunch of research to write the book?
Research? Not at all.
Yeah, because you have inside information, so
right.
I thought
nope.
maybe perhaps there's some other things that you were looking at and you have to dig up. Of course, there are a lot of embellishments, but there are things that maybe you were looking for facts, you know, to make
yeah, you
sure.
Yeah, you know, we did over the 4 years, we did this... every time we'd hear an interesting congressional story, we kind of made note of it ourselves. We'd read it, obviously, in the press, like everybody else would. And there's something mm-hmm. called Heard on the Hill, which is
mm-hmm.
kind of the D.C. gossip area at home where all the little juicy tidbits happen. So I think if we did any research, it was hitting Heard on the Hill to see what stories are happening.
Interesting. And how about the various characters involved in the book? Is that something that pretty much reflects, say, a normal situation, a normal circumstance
yeah.
staffers?
I think we did actually do a really good job of showing what the various types of personalities that work
mm-hmm.
at each of the Senate offices. A lot of we've had tons of media, thankfully, in the book, and a lot of
mm-hmm.
folks have actually said, you know, one thing these girls were able to accomplish is they had really Sawtelle characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when they say Sawtelle characters, they're being, you know, every Senate office has a press secretary that, you know, who was raised with a golden spoon in his mouth. Every office has
yeah.
somebody who doesn't do a whole lot of work. Every office has the two that are overambitious, and every office
right.
has the backstabber, you know. So every office has the characters that we kind of have put in the book, and, you know, they are the traditional Hillstock characters, and some succeed and some don't.
What was the most difficult thing for you to write?
Oh, man. The most difficult thing to write about
yeah.
the book.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure there really was anything difficult to write about the book. I would say it's just making sure that we followed somewhat of a realistic timeline.
Mm-hmm.
To make sure that, you know, it's to give it more that reality feel, that truthfulness, that here's what happens, because we were combining so many different stories into a fictional office, but we had to make sure that it also flowed and made sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how much of you and Alicia is in the book?
Oh, gosh. People obviously know there's two main characters in the book. There's Alice and then there's Janet, A and J, mm-hmm. both Alicia and I, you know, the initials of our first name. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think there's a little bit of Janet in myself. Janet in the book is from a small town in northern Minnesota. She ventures off to D.C. And Allison in the book is from South Dakota, and Alicia happens to be from South Dakota. So I think there's little bits of both of us in those two characters, but I don't think that we're definitely not Janet or Allison.
Mm-hmm. So you're not sweet and shy then?
Oh, I'm so sweet. So it's hard.
Well, you're the punch sassy one. Is that what it is?
It's over, I'll take.
What do you enjoy most about writing the book?
Oh, you know what? I think it's still kind of fun to us, but, you know, both Alicia and I can pick up. You know, we've obviously read our manuscript, you know, a bazillion times. Mm-hmm. And we still, I think, find ourselves, both of us, laughing out loud at some of the parts of the book that, you know, that we find still kind of funny, that just kind of trigger that funny bone in each of us. So I think that's kind of the fun part. And I think the other fun part, again, is having, it's one thing for your mom and dad to read it and like it, but it's another thing for a complete stranger to read it, email us and say, my gosh, bang up job, way to go.
Interesting. How important was it for you ladies to get the book out? I mean, in terms of, you know, here you have the storyline, here's something that you wanted to talk about, and you wanted to get this information out. At first, obviously, it was coming across as an entertainment deal. At what point in time did, you know, hey, we really want to get this thing out because we want people to know, even though it's fictional, yet there's some facts in there that we want people to know.
You know, I think this last year, up until we were published in August, mm-hmm. I just think that over the course of the last year, both Alicia and I again said, you know, if we're going to jump off the diving board and do this, there's no other book out there like it. We got to do it. We're going to do it right. And we're going to be a product that we're proud of. So, you know, I think that kind of over the last year, we both said, you know what, let's do it. Let's do it right. Let's make people laugh. Let's have a good time.
What would you like for your readers to gain from reading the book?
Oh, you know, I just think, you know, to sit down and enjoy a good read. I think also to understand what happens in the Senate office, what happens in, you know, inside the Beltway, what happens on the Hill. Obviously, in the book, we're not teaching about legislation. I think the only thing we talk about is, you know, earmarks and the farm bill. Farm bill, just a little bit. It's not a real political book, so to speak. But it is kind of an interesting aspect. Is that, you know, I've heard a lot of folks that have read it and say, you know, it's interesting to say, you know, here's a book of how you have a boss and you have their employees and how to treat your employees. And sometimes you don't realize how you're treating others until you maybe actually read some of the characters and what they're about and what they do. And your coworkers, you know, if mm-hmm. some people have identified with themselves with the book, they maybe should change their characteristics a little bit.
Mm-hmm. How about this? I mean, every workplace has its own sort of culture. So
Right. What
will be the culture like in a Senate office or a congressional office?
What's the culture like?
Mm-hmm.
Man, I think it's a cross between eighth grade gossiping to, I always call it like a pressure cooker.
Mm-hmm.
You always feel like you're under the pressure cooker. But at the same time, it's an experience that I would never replace in a million years because it is, you'll learn something every single day. You make great opportunities and great relationships, and you're serving mm-hmm. you're serving your state, you know, and we're going to work in the Senate. So I always say it's something to do until age 30, and then you got to go out and, you know, have a family and do other things, other priorities in your life, because
right.
up until age 30, you're working like a dog. I mean, you're working, you know, crazy hours. You're working all around the clock. But at the same time, I think it is that pressure cooker. It's a little bit eighth grade politics. And I think it's a little bit, too, of, you know what, yeah, so everybody's so young,
mm-hmm.
so there's no maturity to know what an office is supposed to be like. Everybody's fresh out of law school, or fresh, there's no professional experience coming in, and not everybody, half of the folks are there to serve for the public good, for serving for their state, and the other half are there serving for their resume.
Okay, interesting. And what type of personality you think that is required to succeed?
I think a hard worker. I think somebody who doesn't care You know, if their job is to stir the tea for the day, or if their job is to write a speech, you do absolutely any task that's thrown at you, and you do it right away, and you work hard, and you get the job done. And you're responsible. You're creative. You're there to serve, not. I always think, too, there's a little bit of difference. There's some folks that are thinking, you know, the constituents are there to serve them, high and glory. That's not the way it is. You're there to serve your state. They're the taxpayer. You're there to serve them.
Well, it sounds like there are conflicting passion here, because you do have people that are really selfless. They have this ideology about serving the community, the public, where they came from, who they represented. And then at the same time, you have someone that, like you say, this is an opportunity for me to beef up my portfolio.
You know, I think that's actually shown in the book quite well. I think Janet and Allison were there to serve the state, and maybe some other characters in the book, you know, the Blairs, the Heidis of the book, they weren't necessarily there to serve. They were there for a little bit more for their resumes.
How is the distinction affects the entire operation of a congressional office?
Well, you'd hope it would be an office that would work together as a team. And I think that's, you know, to make sure you're trying to get things done and get things accomplished. And I think those two can have a conflicting interest and, you know, maybe hurt the ability to get things done and work together. That's not good. You gotta survive as a team.
How long have you been in the Senate office or working in politics in this case?
Well, I don't work in the Senate any longer.
Elise
and I both left. So we both are there between 5 and 6 years.
Okay. Within the 5 and 6 years, looking back in time, what would you say happened to you between year 1 and year 5, personally?
Oh, gosh. You know, I think I grew quite a bit. I think you realize that there must be something in the Potomac River, because people change once they get a little power inside them.
Yeah.
And I think I think going into it, I was very naive. Very northern Minnesota, and going to work on the Hill inside the Beltway, you get to experience things that you probably weren't quite sure. You probably saw a couple things that made your eyes, you know, you want to shut one eye and say, yeah, I really didn't see that happen.
I mean, you come in with high aspirations.
Right.
You come in with wonderful energy and in some ways a sense of innocence about everything that's a right and wrong way and so forth. And then somewhere along the line, I'm sure you experienced the fact that, well, people operate in the gray area.
Right. And then, you know, then you leave.
So in your experience in the 5 years, what would you consider as the major highlights?
Oh, my gosh. That's easy. You know what? Serving Minnesotans and serving Americans to do the right thing. There was, I think over the time I was there that there was like 3 specific pieces of legislation that I saw President Bush sign that, you know, I had my hands on that, you know, that made a difference in people's lives.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one thing I think when people don't realize that every piece of legislation has a consequence. So every time you pass a piece of bill, there's a consequence to somebody. You got to make sure that you're understanding that consequence that's going to have a livelihood on someone's future or someone's current life. So you got to make sure that you're understanding that, you know, there's that personal touch to it. And that's one thing I would never, ever replace, is that making sure, you know, there's so many immigration visas, adoption visas that we help secure to change people's lives that I would never take that back from anybody. That's an amazing experience to be able to help somebody like that.
How about the disappointments that you have experienced in the years that you were on Capitol
Hill?
I
really want to say there was a whole lot of disappointments, so to speak. I think at the time you were just running around with your head cut off like a chicken, because you're just going the entire time. And maybe that little bit of disappointment was that, you know what, I worked all the time. I think I got burnt out. Now looking back at it, I think I would actually probably put a little more of my priority in, you know, your personal life, making sure that it's balanced in order to, you know, help others with the other things. I think I gave too much.
I see. So basically you're telling me there was no time for contemplation.
Zero.
Interesting. How about the process itself? You mentioned that the greatest reward is obviously getting things done that you saw that impacted so many. Yeah. And of course, sometimes in legislation, what may be good for Minnesotans may not necessarily be good for people here in Texas, so to speak.
Sure.
Yeah. how do you take that? How do you pallet those kind of issues?
Well, you know, that's the beauty of that there's 50 states in a union, and you work together with folks that, you know, collaborate along with you on the same issues. And you know what? You give and take a little bit. I'd rather have 80% of something over 100% of nothing. So, and I think that's kind of like right now with the legislative process. There's so much gridlock, Johnny, on both sides.
Right.
You know, there's the extreme right and the extreme left. There's nobody walking down that. There's 80% of Americans actually probably fall right down the middle. But nobody right now is that vocal shouter for those 80%. It's the 20% on both sides that are probably the most vocal and causing the most gridlock, and they really have it their way or the highway. Well, that doesn't work. You don't get anywhere. So I think that, you know, as long as there's a little give and take and you're negotiating, you're working together to get things done, then you are using the process for the right way.
That's true. Has your thought process changed from the time you left Minnesota to be in D.C.? Do you find that you have to change in some of your, you know, you come in with specific things and like, okay, hey, you know, I don't care about the rest of the world. I'm looking at my district. This is what I'm working on.
I think when you're serving when you're working as a staffer, you have to look at, first you're there to represent your state, but you also have to understand what kind of implications that's going to have on everybody else.
Right, right.
You know, and when you give advisement to your boss, senator, or the congressman, you have to make sure you're also sharing that aspect, you know. It could be good for Minnesota, but it's going to make other 49 states drop off the map. Well, then you got yourself a problem.
Have you ever encountered those kind of situations where you have to make some really tough decisions?
Of course. Of course. Every time there's a vote, you got to make sure that you're giving advice that shows, you know what, here are the pros, here are the cons. It's like you make a decision every day, you know, if you're going to put jeans on today, here's the pros, here's the cons. If you're doing a vote, here's the pros, here's the cons. Sometimes, boy, those are tight. You know, sometimes it's a tough decision. And there's a lot of, you know, back and forth. There's a lot of research. There's a lot of facts. And, you know, there's the special interest groups, the lobbying that gets done on a certain issue. And that's a lot of influence.
From the recent election, as you know, I mean, the country is still pretty much divided, even though whichever way you want to look at it. What is your personal take about the Tea Party?
Well, you know what? The Tea Party, the Tea Party is energetic. They have a lot of momentum. Mm-hmm. I agree with generally their policies as far as conservatism, but I'm not quite sure always as necessarily their antics of how they go about it.
Right.
I think there has to be, again, a little bit of give and take, and it's not your way or the highway. You got to make sure that you're informed on an issue before you state your position.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a little, maybe once in a while the Tea Party folks they go and find a headline from the news media that doesn't necessarily say actually the rest of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's kind of a tricky situation. I heard the other day, I think Fox News is saying, you know, is the Tea Party over? And I don't think the Tea Party's over. I think that, you know, they're having that, they have to reinvent themselves a little bit. They have to understand that, you know what, in the Republican Party, the tent can't be small. The tent's got to be big.
Right, right.
You can't exclude folks because they don't match up A, B, C, and Z all the way through with what you think a Republican is.
Right. Well, Capitol Hill, your book, it's the right timing for it to come out right now. It is a fiction, but it does depict in many ways the things that a young, impressionable person that wants to go to Washington serve the people that he or she represents. And then at the same time, you walk into this nightmare that sometimes you have no control over. And how do you address those issues? Because, like, your hands are tied.
Right. Your hands really aren't tied. I mean, I think that's one thing I think that folks don't quite understand. And, you know, in the Senate office, everything's a little opposite. I went from the federal side to the state side. Normally folks go from the state side to the federal side. And I would say this. On the federal side, it's definitely staff-driven. Staff are making decisions. Staff are advising their boss what to do. On the state level, it's more elected official driven. So I don't think the hands are tied of any staffer. I think if there's a will, there's a way.
But you have to be informed in just about everything, and the law of compromise comes into play, obviously.
Oh, constantly.
What are some of the feedbacks have you received from readers about your book?
Oh, gosh. You know, everybody so far has said that they really got a kick out of it, that, you know, everybody's telling us they're laughing out loud, they're having fun with it. You know, I think people always ask if you lose any friends after writing this book. And I would say this, I think one person has befriended us on Facebook. that's kind of like an eighth grade girl stunt. It's kind of something that my eighth grader would do versus actually, you know. So that's kind of silly. Other than that, people have been very positive. Folks are enjoying it. They're saying it was kind of, it's about time, and, you know, we're having fun with it. And
yeah.
We're obviously very energetic, highly motivated, and I think that helps too because we're proud of it. And, you know, we want people to read it, pass it along and read it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's an entertaining book. So, I mean, it's got a lot of stuff in it, and it's funny. And in some ways, depending on how you read it, it could be, you know, serious as well. So what can we expect in terms of, does the book help us better understand the politicians and the basis of our democracy, so to speak?
About democracy? I think the book goes a little bit into politics and the public policy making. It shows a little bit of what actually happens. But I don't think it's definitely not a book that's going to give you, you know, political theory 101.
Right.
But I think
right.
it does show you that, you know, gives you just a glimpse into, you know, the public policy side of it.
Well, it gives you a good snapshot about the inner workings behind the scenes. The running around and everything that you have to do.
All the shenanigans, right?
Right.
Helping the family. I think that's one thing folks would be surprised about, you know, the amount of work and time that the Senate staffers deal with family members and their goofy requests and what they demand.
Right. Well, I mean, one of the things that I've read, for example, in the Iowa straw poll, the thing that you've written about fishing off your neighbor's dock, you know which one I'm talking about, I think.
Right.
I have a friend that coined a phrase, catch and release program. You know, that's what the case is.
Right.
Those are the things that I think that are happening all over, not just necessarily in this fictional office. I guess in some ways.
I think it's true, right?
Yeah. The latest thing that's going on now is the Senator Martinez, I believe, from New Jersey. Under scrutiny. Yeah, Martinez, that's under scrutiny in some ways of the things that he does and so forth, and that's quite interesting. Any thoughts about that?
You know, I think that I'm not going to make a judgment, obviously, Martinez.
No.
You know, but
right.
I think that, you know what, I'm glad that there's policies in place to make sure the ethics and the law is being followed, and, you know, no one's above the law.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're doing something wrong, you're going to get caught, and better face the consequence, right, because you made the decision.
Interesting. What some of the things that does happen that's not in the book, some ways. We're not talking about policy.
Yeah. You know, I think that, you know, we've had a lot of folks ask us why we didn't include in the book that there's some Senate staffers that their sole job is to walk around the office dog.
Yeah.
That is kind of funny. You know, that's their responsibility is there's an office dog and they take care of the dog all day. And, you know, I just think that there's, I would think that we also maybe didn't, you know, I think we covered it pretty well. Like, I think we actually gave a pretty good glimpse as to what life is really like.
Is there a big displacement here from what people think your position and what you do on Capitol Hill versus what is actually really happening prior to the book?
Oh, my gosh. I don't think people have an absolute clue what goes on and what you're asked to do and what you do. I don't think my parents even knew, you know, and they were along with the whole process. I don't think the average person knows or believes it.
Being that you're on the inside and now of course you got out, are there things that you would love to change in some ways for the better?
Of course. I always tell Lisa, and that's my partner in crime in the book, I always tell her, I'm like, if you run for Senate in Willan, I'll be your chief of staff and we'll have the best run office on the Hill. And I think that's true because I think we've realized things that, you know, we realize things that happen and the things that we change and things that we would never want inside our office. And, you know, I just think that's, yeah, absolutely.
What are some of the things that you would do differently?
Well, I would hope that, you know, if Alicia or I was ever elected, that we wouldn't have, you know, we wouldn't get that Potomac fever, that we'd realize that, you know what, we still put our pants on just like everybody else every single day and there's no high and mighty power. And, you know what, life can change at an instant's notice, and you got to take those blessings every single day that you not take them for granted. And you want, you know, demand things of your staff. You want to have a staffer who has the sole responsibility to stir the office, make you a cup of tea and, you know, stir it every single day, and that's all they do. And I just think that you'd be more appreciative of your staff and understand that they know they have families and they have priorities and stuff like that.
Interesting.
And also, I think once in a while, elected officials, they're so buzzed for time that they forget about they have a family.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, you know, but I think I would change that too.
This is interesting, though, because I think the public perceive Congress as working very little. Don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, they do. But they work around the clock. And this is what folks don't understand. They're being pulled and uh-huh. swung in all the different directions because they're going out to all these meetings and speeches, and they're running around. You know, that's what folks don't get. That's what you don't see.
Yeah. Well, I guess what people classify as attending a fundraising event to, you know, to put
work.
Money in your own caucus,
that's
it may
work,
be
though.
Work, but it's not working for the community in some ways, I guess.
Oh, yeah, but careful, because, you know, those campaign fundraising, those are working for those all. You know what? That might not be you align your policy interests with,
right.
but that may be where your neighbor's interests are in.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, usually campaign fundraising is around a certain issue, so that's important to them. Because you think the best color in the world is green, I think the best color in the world is blue. It doesn't mean that if I raise money for that blue, that there's something wrong, you know?
Right.
That's part of that democracy. That's how America works.
What you're talking about here is building relationships.
Of course. That's all politics is, isn't it? Relationship building.
Yeah. So the average person out there is looking like, wait a minute, now you're telling me you work 16 hours a day, but what exactly is work 16 hours a day?
Yeah, you know, this is a good question. I always tell I teach political science, I tell my students, here's what my day was like. You know, get to the office around 7 o'clock in the morning. At 8 o'clock, I start meetings. I have meetings from 8 o'clock to about 5:30. I have a different meeting every 15 minutes with different groups.
Yeah.
All different issues. I mean, I'd have some days I'd meet with 6 different doctor groups. You know, I'd have the belly button doctor, I'd have the ear doctor, the eye doctor, the foot doctor, all going for their aspect of Medicare and why their policy provisions and reimbursement are important. And then, at 6:30, when everybody else went home, we'd sit and try to go through all the information that you received all day. You'd leave about 9 o'clock at night, go home, and, you know, I slept with 2 Blackberries next to my bed, and I'd have to answer, you know, if the message went off at 2 a.m., gosh darn it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
He answered it.
That's interesting, though, because years ago I remember watching the movie The American President, if you recall that movie.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and of course that's a romantic movie, but it's a wonderful movie. For the first time, you have a nice glimpse at seeing the president's schedule, where, like you were talking about, 15 minutes or whether it's 15, 10 minutes or whatever, and then your schedule is full. And somehow, if the meeting ends early, thank God you got this quick 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes break.
Right. That's the way it is.
But I don't think the public realize that, though. Don't you think?
Oh, I don't think they know. And I don't think every congressman or every senator is working like that, but I think majority are.
Majority of them are. But
that's what they do.
But not many people know that, though.
Right.
How would you present it to a point where the people will know about it and have a different sense of appreciation of how hard their senators and their congressmen, congresswomen working for them?
Oh, you know what? I'm not going to give any pity party for the senator or the congressman and have the public know that. You know what? They're making like $190,000 or something a year.
Yeah.
They have staff. They have a full staff in their state office and their D.C. offices. No pity party here. They chose to do this. Anybody put their name on an election certificate and run, that's a tough thing to do. So, no, I don't think I don't think the public needs to know every 15 minutes of a meeting. So what? That's part of the job. Take it or leave. If you don't like to do it, don't run for re-election.
How can the book help aspiring young people who dream to work on the Hill?
I think folks are a little naive once in a while.
Yeah.
So I think the book kind of gives maybe a little bit of a glimpse as
to
what can happen to you. It's entertaining at the same time, but it's also educational and it is informing. So I think that's, it kind of does give a little bit of here's what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the book is so fictional that it would never happen in real life. But, you know what?
Right.
Anything that they would experience, that young staffer, it would be a, you know, yellow brick road.
Well, it is an entertaining book, but at the same time, there is a work and life balance here that you talk about. Because on one hand, yes, I'm here, I'm focused, this is what I want to get accomplished. And at the same time, I have an opportunity to see the snapshots of the other side of it. You know, I may not be an active participant, but at least people can look at it from a perspective, this is entertaining.
Right.
So that's interesting. What are some of the lessons we could learn from the novel?
Oh, my gosh. I think, you know what, again, how to treat others, how you like to be treated. I think it's kind of like, goes back to Sunday school, right? And the Sunday school teacher always told you, you know, treat others the way you want to be treated. And I think there's a little bit of that in the book. There's, you know, it glimpsed into, again, a little bit of the political process, the legislative process, and I just think it's just a fun read, and if folks are looking just for, you know, sitting back, and if folks are telling us they're picking up and they're reading it in 2 hours, so you know what? Spend a little 2 hours in, inside the Beltway and have yourself a good chuckle.
You have worked on putting together some sort of a group teaching young people about politics, correct?
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that.
Oh, interesting. So it's called the National Youth Leadership Camp and Academy. It's a summer program for high school students who are interested in learning more about public policy, with their future lawyers. We're trying to take the America's best, top talented students, putting them in D.C. for a week, and at the end of the week, they actually have a bill proposal that they present to selected congressmen and senators on the Hill. And, you know, it's kind of a, you know, there's hockey schools, hockey camps for the future hockey players.
Right.
This is sort of a camp for the folks that want to go and work on the Hill or, you know, run for office themselves or serve in other offices. It's fun. It's great. It's for those other students out there who maybe, you know, don't swing the bat or they don't, you know, sing a note, but they'd rather write a political speech.
That's interesting. One of the things that I enjoyed, I mean, I'm a naturalized citizen. I was born in Malaysia, but I'm a citizen of the United States now. But I think one of the things that I really enjoyed was when I had the opportunity to be involved, I guess in some ways, working with politics when I was in the restaurant association and whatnot, representing my state. But the fact that the opportunity to go to Washington, D.C. and see the inner workings, whether from a national treasure, the National Monument, those kind of things, the museums, and having the opportunity to walk down the halls of Congress and to really see the inner workings, it gives you a different perspective about America.
Right, and there's so much energy, isn't there? I mean, you feel it in the walls, and there's a buzz, and you run into folks, and everybody's rustling, tussling here and there, but there is something passionate, and every time you step into the Capitol, boy, if you don't get goosebumps on your arms, there's something wrong with you.
Do you feel like this is something that every school in the nation, perhaps, you know, it's a certain grade that is, of course, maybe like, say, first year of high school or...
I think actually right now with the I think there is a requirement that says like either every school has to offer a D.C. trip in 7th or 6th grade.
Right.
So I think students are definitely traveling to the Capitol. I think that's something that you should do as a young person. I also think that, you know, even as young adults and even as a, you know, older adults, go and learn and go and see. And there's no better. D.C. is a great city for a vacation.
Right.
Great city. Lots of history. Lots of things to learn.
I think once you go and you walk through, it doesn't matter what your political affiliation is. I believe that once you walk through, you will feel the energy and you will have a fresh, new perspective about things.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
And so that is something different because then you have a different sense of appreciation of being an American.
Of course. Again, if you can walk in the Capitol and not get goosebumps on your arms, then...
Yeah. And then not only that, looking at people like you, of course, you're no longer there. But I mean, as you run into these individuals and you see the passion that they have about certain things that they're doing, it gives you a sense of knowing that there are people out there that are thinking first for the country.
Right.
So it makes a big difference. It sort of kind of get things going. And knowing that you can go home at night and sleep and feel comfortable about it. Where can someone go to buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Yeah, of course. We have our own website. It's capitalhellbook.com. It's capital with the O-L. But you can find Capitol Hell at Amazon, Barnes & Noble. We're on e-books across. We're on every single e-book you can possibly be on. And we're having a lot of fun. We're on all your favorite bookstores. So it's Capitol Hell. And our own website is capitalhellbook.com.
Wonderful. How has writing the book impacted you personally?
Oh, gosh. I think it's been a fun journey. I think it's been an absolute blast. Alicia and I are having so much fun together with it. And again, you know what? We jumped off the diving board with the book and we did it. And no turning back. Absolutely love it.
Would you have done something different in the book?
No.
How about on the maturity meter? I mean, what have you learned in terms of writing the book?
Oh, gosh. You know, I think what we learned probably the most is that you know, I still think it's kind of funny. So we talked about the publishing story, but, you know, we went to two publishers, went to a big New York publisher, and then we got picked up by a small Midwest publisher. And I think still when we walked in with our manuscript the first day, they kind of looked at us kind of funny, and we both were so proud of it. We threw it down on the desk and said, okay, here, we're done. And they were like, has it been, you know, hasn't gone through editing, hasn't gone through the proofreading. And then that process all kicked in. I mean, we went through two editors, two proofreaders, and now, I mean, no one, I don't think anybody told us how much, you know, after publishing with the book, you know, what you do. And that's been a fun journey, a fun ride, but let me tell you, you know, you there's a lot of work involved after
Right. Well, now you got it. Great. Now we got to get it out to the public.
right.
What advice do you have for people that are in your shoes, basically, who are perhaps who are still in Capitol Hill and elsewhere, whether it's at national level or at the state level, that are aspiring authors who wants to write something, a memoir about what they've learned? What would you recommend them to do?
I would just say go for it. Do it. Get it done. Get started. Follow through. Finish it out. And we've run into so many people always say, well, I started a book. And it's like, well, you know what? Finish. You know, set yourself some easy goals to reach and make sure that you're, you know, the final completion happens. Do it. Absolutely. Of course. Go for it.
What is next for you?
You know, I'm still teaching. I just got married on December 31st. So I think this
congratulations.
Next year is, thank you. This next year is, you know, dedicated to family. Alicia and I both have the New Year's resolution of writing the second book this year. You know, we always keep getting asked what's going to happen to McDermott in the book. So we think that McDermott's not going to go on a presidential campaign, so the book two is going to be about a lot of campaign stories that have happened to us and happened to other folks. So we're excited. So we're just going to keep, you know what, we're keeping traveling. We're going from across the state, from, you know, coast to coast with Capitol Hill, and we'll keep doing that and just having fun and making sure folks are laughing.
Wonderful. Have you heard from Senator Coleman?
Oh, you know, great question. You know, we haven't personally heard from him. We've heard that he's told others that he has found the book to be very entertaining and that he has called us creative entrepreneurs. So that's a, you know, that's a name that we'll take. We're both very appreciative as a good senator. And, you know, we both are really thankful for the opportunity he gave both of us, and we have a lot of respect for him. Absolutely.
Wonderful. How do young people go about in getting an opportunity to work on the Hill?
Yeah, the best advice I can give, and I get this question all the time from my students, the best advice is go work on a campaign. Go find a campaign, volunteer, work your butt off, work your fanny off, go do every task, get there. Don't complain. Show you're a hard worker, because usually what happens is folks hire, once they get elected, they hire from their campaign staff and the campaign volunteers. So go and find someone you believe in. Go volunteer. Go get involved.
Interesting. Now, of course, when they start out with a certain ideology about certain things, they focus on the causes that they believe in and helping this individual candidate to succeed. Are there any other ways of doing it in terms of, you know, wanting to make it as a career?
Well, I think you can make it as a career. I just think that you need to figure out how to get into that first position. They're sought after positions, so I think you need to start on the campaign. But then, you know what, there's folks, there's constantly promotions happening and folks moving up and different titles and different positions in a congressional office. So go and do and use your talents and your abilities to, you know, either be the office manager or to be a policy aide or to be the scheduler or to work in IT or, you know, human resources. It's all there.
What is a good background to have to equip you, I guess, educationally, to give you a leg up?
Sure. I think now folks would say you probably need to have, you know, the law degree, the MBA to go for a policy position. Everybody's got them. Everybody's got the advanced degree. So I just think you need to make sure you you know, you have for sure a college bachelor's degree. I don't think there's any magic major for you to have. I think it, you know, anything and everything is good. And I think you need the skills of hard work. You need to be, you know, obviously a people person. You got to understand the latest technology. You got to be willing to work hard.
And basically married to your job for the first 4 or 5 years.
Right. Then do whatever you want to do.
Do you think type A personality? Do you need to have that, or can you be a little bit more?
You know, hopefully there's a mixture of type A and type B, but I do think there's a whole type. I mean, I think the capitals. I don't think the egos don't fit inside the Capitol dome. You know, I think there's a ton of type A's. Variety is good. Variety is good.
Do you have a lot of chance to travel the country in some ways?
You travel back to your home state a lot. I think that I think ethics laws have changed a little bit. Back in the day, we were there. Special interest groups could pay for you to go on a trip, a research-based trip. And so I think you used to travel more than they do now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you do travel to your state, of course.
Do you have any plans to run for office in the future?
Donnie, answer me this question. Can you write a juicy, saucy book and run for political office?
Why not? Generations have changed.
I don't know if anyone's done it. So I don't know if you can do it. I know. Who knows? Never close any doors.
That's right.
Obviously, I got the political bug in my stomach, but you know, right now, I'm more worried about the eighth grade volleyball schedule than I am about what's going on the hill.
Well, you'll have to look at it this way: everything has its own time. Every moment, has its own time. There's a changing of the guard, so to speak. Every time when it floods, the shoreline changes.
Right.
So you never know.
Never know.
How about your partner?
Alicia? She'd be a great senator. She would be a good senator. She's a whippersnapper, boy. Watch out. And you know what? She won't be afraid to wear pink high heels on the Senate floor.
I see. Well, they have made some wonderful movies, and the interesting part about it, the comical approach to politics sometimes helps because it gives the public a better understanding and a much more palatable perception of what's really happening on Capitol Hill.
Right.
Do you feel like they should make more of those kind of movies?
Oh, I think so. Why not?
Because it's too serious, all the time. And it's just different.
Right.
One question. This is more of a serious note. And the fact that you've been in D.C. for about 5-6 years, and there's obviously a lot of debate now in some ways, I guess, about term limits for congressional members. What are your thoughts about that?
You know, I think the best term limit is called the public election of, who's serving. I think having a term limit is unconstitutional. I'm a big believer in the Constitution. So I think, for me, term limits, if you don't like somebody, throw them out. Don't reelect them.
By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
I think my recipe for living is easy. I think you got to have a little faith. You got to have a little fun. And you just got to make sure that your family should be your top priority. If you do all three of things with those, I think you'd be successful, you'd be happy, and that'd be the key.
Mm-hmm. How have you applied that recipe for living in your life?
Gosh, I hope I apply it. I think I hope that I always remember that those three top things should be always the focus and the crystal clear. Now, personally, has it always been? Probably not. And you got to readjust, and you got to make sure you prioritize again. You start to, falter in other areas. So no one's perfect. Obviously no one's perfect. And I think if you have, make sure that those, your faith is, I always want to put like a crystal, if your faith is on a crystal line and, straightforward and you're straight to the point of your values, then that's where you should live from. And that's me is key.
How is Jane 10 years ago versus Jane now?
Oh, my gosh, first of all, I think I'm more, probably not as naive.
Mm-hmm.
I think I was naive. I think I was a little sheltered. Now I've seen a little bit more and probably have grown up, thankfully have grown up. And, I think I'm a little bit more, I could care less what other people think. I think when you're, younger, you kind of really care what other people think. And, the peer pressure really happens to happen quite a bit, when you're even... Not only when you're an eighth grader, but the peer pressure happens even when you're in college, happens when you're in law school. And I'm thinking now, so what? And I think that's changed me a little bit. And I just love right now being able to teach and being a part of young people's lives and helping them go have great futures. That's what I live for.
Projecting forward, what would Jane be like 10 years from now?
Oh, my gosh! I hope I'd be a good mother. I hope I'd be a young, fun, good mother who's, still, the crystal line of my faith is, how I live every day. And just making sure that I'm giving back to my community. I don't care if that's, running the school fair or if it's running for Senate. But, you're giving back and you're serving. And I just think that's important. And, you know, I just hope that, yeah, that recipe for life I just gave you 2 seconds ago is still at the forefront of, you know, my life 10 years from now, my life 20 years from now.
Yeah. You've been living it. That's the interesting part.
I hope so. I think so.
How has your family looked at what you've accomplished so far? What's their take on it?
Yeah, you know, my parents are, I'm very close to my mom and dad, and mm-hmm. I've got the world's greatest parents in the whole entire world, and my parents are, they're very supportive. They're, I think my, they always say, you know what, you've done more in your, I'm 38 years old, my parents have said, you've mm-hmm. done more in your 38 years than we've done in our 65 years of life. So they're always up for something new. They always know that I have, you know, 25 different projects going on, and
yeah.
I think they like that enthusiasm and that energy, but, you know, my parents really are the core of who I am.
Yeah.
You know, my parents really, really pushed that, you know what, my dad was on the school board as a kid, my mom works with folks that have disabilities, and, you know, we're just out, they created the Jane Jones, so to speak, and that's cool.
That's wonderful. That's very nice of you to say that about them. I'm very sure they're very proud of what you've accomplished.
And I'm thankful to have them as parents.
That's wonderful. Any final thoughts about Capitol Hill?
No, just go out, read it, let us know what you think. It's capitalhealthbook.com, and we really appreciate your time, Johnny. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Wonderful, Jane. Thank you for the great recipe for living, too, for sharing that with us, because I know that you have lived your life in many, many ways every day, believing in the things that you talk about, which is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for spending this time with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio as well. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be the publisher and editor-in-chief for Chicken Soup for the Soul Books, Amy Newmark. Amy and I will be discussing about the latest Chicken Soup for the Soul book, which she co-authored with Steve Posner, titled Billy Graham and Me. It is a special anthology documenting the life and legacy of the world's best-known evangelist. The book contains stories from world leaders, including every living president and the people who know Billy Graham best. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening. Have a blessed week. Jane, thank you again, and have a blessed day.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you. Bye-bye.